Here I am, standing on the corner of a busy intersection on a hot summer day in February. I beeline between patches of shade, trying not to get run over, as I go from monument to monument, looking at markers for famous politicians and busts of business leaders that built this place. Buenos Aires is a beautiful city. It's very European. Its founders even hired French architects to create wide boulevards, houses, apartment buildings, just like in Paris. In its heyday at the turn of the 20th century, Argentina was the seventh wealthiest nation on the planet, even surpassing the United States. But the Great Depression, and later U.S. military intervention in the region in the 1970s, destabilized the country, and they never recovered. Today, inflation is over 100%. As I walked the tree-lined streets, I finally ended up at a monument to the fallen soldiers of the Falklands War. You remember that conflict in 1982, when Argentina invaded and occupied the British colonial territories. Allegedly, the president of Argentina at the time needed to distract the country from the poor economy and thought nationalistic pride would do the trick. 74 days later, 649 Argentinian and 355 British military personnel were dead. The UK kept control of the South Atlantic Islands. Everything always seems to begin and end with a need to conquer. But was I any different? I had just flown 14 hours, traveled to the Southern Hemisphere for the first time, and was about to sail on a ship across one of the most treacherous stretches of ocean in the world. Was I crazy? Arrogant? What was I hoping to get out of this expedition that was at the heart of a fellowship I had worked so hard to get and had been postponed for 2 years because of COVID? What was I here to conquer? The next day, I'd fly to Ushuaia, the southernmost city in the world, to roll my suitcase aboard the ship, the National Geographic Explorer. I was ready to find out. I'm Michael Hernandez, your host and tour guide for Change the Narrative, the podcast about innovation in work, life, and education. This season is a very exciting one. It's all about my expedition to Antarctica as part of my Lindblad Expeditions National Geographic Grosvenor Teacher Fellowship. In these episodes, you'll hear about the people and places I visited, how each of us were uniquely drawn to this place, and how the act of bearing witness changes how you relate to the world and launches you on a different kind of personal expedition.
You know, there are stories in life that sometimes meet each other, and sometimes the legend becomes reality. And it was just a chance that I got to be on board, and I said yes, and I never looked back.
Alex Searle was one of the many naturalists on board our ship. Naturalists are expert scientists and historians who educate guests about Antarctica and drive us across the sea in zodiacs to land at various spots during our daily excursions. Alex is a journalist from Chile, another country with a troubled history with U.S. intervention. I sat down to talk with Alex while we sailed across the Drake Passage.
We really bring people back from Antarctica a changed person in many aspects. Even though we do tourism, and it's also something that has been growing, right? Just our presence here makes an impact. But bringing people over here, showing them these things, then they make a personal connection with the place, a connection with the wildlife, a connection with what's happening here. People think that Antarctica is a pristine place, that nothing is touched by humans. But we, for example, we're still fishing here. Yeah, everything on land is protected. But the waters are not. Even though we have to control it or whatever, they try to say that this is sustainable, but I think everybody knows that, you know, industrial fishing is really not sustainable at all. I think we looted everything else, and this is like the last big bank of fish and krill that we have in the world. It's probably the most productive seas in the world, which is, of course, they look it with, you know, money eyes. Uh, I think no image that we can see on a TV or a photograph really makes justice to the place. It goes beyond what we can understand about scale, and you know, and it makes me think about all of that, how small we are. It makes you think about scale and time in a completely different manner. If my lifetime doesn't mean a thing in the large scale of the planet, it is up to us right now to do things that will certainly matter in the near future.
There's a famous saying that we're the main character in the story and everything else is sort of secondary, but this human need to own or conquer or be the first or filter it through our eyes seems detrimental to, you know, protecting and preserving the natural world.
I think there is something very important that needs to happen, and that is a shift in the mindset of the way we look at things. I think there will come a time where society, we will not own these places or these things, you know, this wildlife, but we will learn that we are actually sharing the space with them. Whatever I can do, by telling people stories, by showing them these places.
Yeah, I want to get back to stories for a second.
Sure.
It's difficult to comprehend, you know, the scale and the scope of the glaciers that have been hundreds of thousands of years
in the making,
and the continental drifts, and how, you know, over hundreds of millions of years the continents have shifted position on the planet. It's hard to wrap your head around that kind of thing. And I feel like storytelling, whether it's a journal to yourself or a blog post or a video you're making, helps us process.
Sure.
You start to think about it more deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And even though I've worked in Antarctica for a long time and I have a lot of experience now, I still struggle with processing everything. It's never just another day. There's always something that makes it interesting, awe-inspiring. Yeah, I think it becomes a bigger story. I think it, for me at least, I've been going through the schools in my city, in Santiago, and just talking to them about this place. We think in Chile that we own Antarctica. We think that it's part of our territory. That's what they teach you in school. This is Chile, and there's the Antarctica, and that's the part that Chile has, sort of thing.
Wow.
When they learn that nobody owns Antarctica, then it's like, what? So other countries have bases there too, and they, you know, and then when they understand that it was an agreement we all had to protect the place and just make it, you know, just to use it for science, and then I think Antarctica for kids especially becomes cooler.
That's really fascinating, because I feel in the United States, or I guess every country, there's the official story that's, you know, condoned by the government, written in textbooks.
Yeah.
The mythology of our country being the best, or,
sure,
or correct, or whatever, especially in the United States. And I feel like that's a big stumbling block. Do you feel like you ever get resistance or pushback from people in Chile about correcting the record, like presenting facts that are accurate versus what we want or wish
it
were?
I so at least I would say the public, they don't have a problem with it. It is a surprise. I think everybody sees the benefit of being an international territory more than anything else. I've never had any pushback, but it is a surprise. They're not expecting that at all. I don't know, I've never spoken, I would say, yet to the Ministry of Education or anything like that. I don't know if I would get any pushback from them. Maybe the military will be hard to explain them that to, but they know it. I mean, we all know it, but it's not there in the official story yet. Whatever happens in Antarctica has to do with what is happening around the world. Antarctica went through many changes. There's the history of all of that. There's the record of all of that. There's all that data there, and we can have a glimpse of what could happen in the planet the way we are going, right? And that's That's very important. I think that when that becomes much more evident, which is happening right now with, you know, the extreme events that we're having and all of that, I think the official story of this small country owing that place will just crumble. I wanted to be a war correspondent. I thought conflict was the main issue. I think today we have a bigger issue in our world, and I think I am on the right war, we shall say, right now. I think we talk about conservation, we talk about, you know, efforts. I think there is an urgency, and I think we need to defend Antarctica, not only protect it.
Defend Antarctica. Bearing witness really made clear to me the moral imperative we face with climate change. Conquering fear, overcoming ignorance, satisfying curiosity. We often phrase the search for knowledge as a fight, a kind of intellectual or emotional conflict. Teachers, for example, say that students have to master content. Alex agreed with me that telling stories, like this one that you're listening to right now, is a way to process and make sense of the world. That mindset is a big part of my book about storytelling, too. Maybe learning and understanding isn't about a race to be first or to plant a flag in the ground, but an ongoing journey into territories we wonder about and having the courage to explore uncharted places in our hearts. In the next episode, I talk with a climate scientist who gives advice on what each of us can and can't do in the battle to fight climate change and defend the planet. This episode was written and produced by me, Michael Hernandez. It was created as part of my Lindblad Expeditions National Geographic Grosvenor Teacher Fellowship, an experience of a lifetime for which I am extremely grateful. You can find out more about National Geographic Education, the Grosvenor Teacher Fellowship, and tons of other teaching and learning resources on their website, education.nationalgeographic.org.